This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
That's exactly what we're here to do. That's what it says on the tin. They call me Mark Dolan, broadcaster, entertainer, man about town, and I'm joined in the studio by two very prime specimens of male human, in the form of Colin Chadwick, who is a formidable stand-up comedian to the extent that his future is so bright I slightly resent him. Welcome to the show, mate.
Hi, thanks, Mark.
Yeah, do you know what? If I didn't slightly hate you, then that would be, it would mean you were a shit comedian. So I think you have to just enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I kind of like, I also kind of harass you and hang around outside the studio.
And, which I enjoy.
And yeah.
I'm ready for that. And I'll tell you, the ultimate stalker is stand-up comedian, entrepreneur, media icon, television producer, star maker. I'm slightly running out of nouns for the one and only.
I'm looking for this person. Where the hell is it? It's only us three in here.
You're like a quadruple threat in terms of show business. You're a producer, you're a writer, and you're also a stand-up as well. Or brackets were, but Les Keen, I don't think you ever give up. It's like being a New York cop. You may not have the badge, but you can still kill bad people.
Yeah, right. You're absolutely, and as an ex-comedian, I can still kill bad people. That's good. By the way, Matt, I just might point out that the stools in here are so uncomfortable. The top of this stool has got a circumference literally smaller than the circumference of my anus. How
I know.
Is that meant to work?
And it's amazing because this is part of your anatomy that's quite weather-beaten already from years of
Taking it.
So therefore, yeah. Well, I can apologise for the discomfort of the chairs, but it's what I would call the Letterman rule. Now, David Letterman, iconic talk show host, perhaps the greatest entertainment broadcaster of his generation, the man whose very surname is shorthand for the talk show. He had it in his contract that the temperature in the theatre at the Ed Sullivan Theatre in New York City had to be 16 degrees, and it was in the contract. And the reason why is because he was convinced that the audience was sparkier if it was cold in there. And a lot of beautiful women would come on, like Penelope Cruz, basically a negligee, and freeze their arse off. But that's how Letterman rolled.
He was just looking for peanut smuggling moments. That's what he was after.
I think he was.
Also, I should point, and in fact, no, rule number two, I'll listen.
Go on.
I'm sure I said this last time, so that's
how listen, I love to turn around, I like recycle materials.
Yeah.
What I've been doing.
This is more, it's like similar with like panel shows and stuff like that. Make sure the chairs are uncomfortable or people just go to sleep.
Correct.
Yeah, that's, honestly, so that's,
I mean, a sofa, there has never been a great studio entertainment show where people are on like comfy sofas.
Hello, good
in
morning, Britain. Hello.
GMB.
What do you mean, Mark? I don't understand.
The thing about old Piers Morgan is that he, I happen to know, consumes a bag of Meow Meow before every broadcast. So he may seem to have energy, but it's not natural.
By the way, going back to David Letterman, Google at the moment, I saw a picture of David Letterman about 2 weeks ago. He looks like Santa Claus. You literally will look at it and you're going, I go, who's that? And you go, I have no idea. And I'll say, it's David Letterman. And you're going, oh, vaguely see it in the eyes. He's turned into Santa Claus.
Well, here's what it is, Colin Chadwick, which is that they're calling it the, I must remember the expression because it's marvellous. Yes, they're calling it the achievement beard, right? Because Stephen Colbert grew the beard, Letterman grew the beard. And it seems like once you're kind of out of office,
yes,
you can do what the hell
it's like
you
a retirement plan is to grow a beard.
Now, you are a brilliant comedian and you're in show business, therefore you take care of yourself and etc.
Yes.
etc. What will you stop doing when you officially retire from show? What will be the first thing that you just let go of?
I think my looks.
Really?
I try so hard to be healthy, and I think I'll finally start drinking and eating whatever I want. You know, just eating in bed. Eating from a saucepan, stuff like that.
Oh, this is strong. Les already does these things, so I think...
I actually cook in bed. It's a dangerous thing, but you make a tent with a duvet. It's like camping indoors but outdoors. A success beard, how successful are the homeless then? Because they've got some tremendous beards out
They've
there.
Nailed it.
You've got mice living in there, all sorts of shit.
See,
so really, we're looking and going, oh, poor guy, 50p again. Actually, very successful.
Well, oddly enough, the homeless community, of whom we have deep, deep sympathy, affection and love for, of course, don't seem to have any follicle issues, because for some reason with the outdoor heavy drinking lifestyle comes not only a full magnificent beard but normally thick, really thick long hair.
That would make sense,
like a proper hairline, like really like post sort of, you know, hair transplant sort of look.
Well, it's kind of devolving, isn't it? Because going back to when we had to have more hair on our body because it was more cold, we didn't have clothes,
because on the Euston Road it's like bloody Antarctica.
Yes,
in the height of winter. Now, hence the stool, that's my Letterman rule, which is uncomfortable stools, which keeps you guys on form in order to chew through the biggest stories of the week. It's been a very big one. There's many, many things to talk about. I'd like to throw a curveball at you, as is my want, Colin and Les, today. We'll kick off with something which is trending at the moment. And this is a big dispute in the Labour Party about the remarks before she came to office of a Labour MP who essentially, you know, allegedly made anti-Semitic remarks in relation to the state of Israel and the behaviour of Israel. And Les Keane, Sir Les himself, raised a very good point when we were having a small glass of champagne before the show in the green room, which is, can you say anything negative about Israel without being anti-Semitic?
Well, I think the Eurovision is coming up in 2 weeks' time, and they're in that. So I think you just have to choose your targets and how you go after Israel.
So this is how you take Israel down, is by giving them 1 point.
I think, yeah, or no points, or even just getting on Twitter and just being a bit snarky about their eligibility for the competition.
This is genius. So the way to bring down Israel is to have an amusing gif of perhaps Benjamin Netanyahu falling over.
That'd be good. Also, you could just do playground bounce. Just say, Israel, you smell.
Yeah.
I like this.
Yeah.
This
is you smell. You say, your mum sucks cocks for money.
Do you know there are times when... Are you all right, Les? He's not had a lot of sleep. I wish sometimes that we were in charge, because I think the world, based on this conversation, I think the world will be a way better place.
I think basically just insult them on just sort of basic, you know, hygiene problems.
It is a bit annoying, isn't it? Because let's put it out there now. We're on FUBAR. We're not the BBC. We can say what we like. There are some pretty nasty things that the Israeli state do. There have been appalling transgressions of human rights, belligerence, killing, erecting developments, building houses where they were not supposed to, all that sort of stuff. Israel isn't a particularly laudable sort of political project, is it?
Not really, no.
They're like Luxembourg.
They're bold.
Now, that's a great Irish word for naughty, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You bold little. You little bold tinker.
They're bold fellas, is the Israelis.
I mean, listen, you know, you're an Irishman. In some ways, you know, that is a sort of, has been historically, Northern Ireland has been a sort of hotbed of political and religious conflict. Okay, it's a stretch, but there are parallels between the two regions.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm a halfsie as well. I'm one half Catholic, one half Protestant.
So if
anything, I'm the perfect person to sort out Israel.
You actually are. It's true.
Literally nobody likes you in Ireland.
No. That's why I'm
apart
here.
Apart from the Jews. They love him.
Correct. Yeah. Do you have a... especially when you started out, did you have a joke going, I'm half Catholic, half Protestant, and therefore...
Not really, actually. That's how little it seemed to matter. It wasn't an issue, because living in the South, we didn't let the Troubles come down there too often.
Well, I mean, that is the amazing thing about Ireland in the 70s and 80s, is that the Republic of Ireland was sort of just like, not oblivious to that, but this was just like a very jolly country where people... had sort of Guinness and a lot of singing. And meanwhile, kind of, north of the border, carnage.
Yeah, it was almost like when you see someone who's really drunk and oblivious of a slice in their head, the fact that they're missing half of their teeth, almost like Shane McGowan. everything from the neck down was oblivious to what was happening from the neck up in Ireland.
I mean, the best argument for a united Ireland is just go to Northern Ireland and then go to Southern Ireland and decide which you like more. And I challenge anyone who's neutral to go to Southern Ireland and go,
Why should it all be this?
Am I wrong?
Can you translate that now, though, to Israel and Palestine? Would you do the same?
Well, yeah, because you see, I think the Arabs know how to live. I'm a big tea drinker and also really strong coffee and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I also like the apparel of the Palestinian man. I think it's very forgiving tailoring.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, because it's sort of very loose-fitting, what look like enormous, gigantic T-shirts. And I just feel comfortable, you know, in that world. And therefore, whereas, I mean, I have many Jewish friends.
We could do with it now, because going back to your previous point about Letterman's 17 degrees, you have got it set in this studio to the rotisserie chicken.
Yes, it is.
Haven't you? What the hell is going on? It's so hot in here. I need to put my... In fact, I'm just going to pop
to
my...
Quote, to
I'm
paraphrase.
Just popping my... I'm going to put my Palestinian garb on now.
To paraphrase Malcolm Tucker in, I think it was the... What the hell was the comedy about the politics? Thick of it. The Thick of It. God bless you. Thank you for that. Malcolm Tucker in a Thick of It movie. And Les Keane, you are sweating like a bearded rapist at a train station.
I like it. One thing to point out about this, going back to
you probably wrote that line. He writes everything, yeah. You know. But Les controls telly.
Going back to the original point of the story, which was actually started off from this female MP, whose name eludes me at the moment. But
and that's a good thing.
But prior to her being an MP, she said some comments which were regarded as anti-Semitic about relocating Israel to America, I think. But I think another point to that, this is nothing to do with the content of what she's talking about, but it's more to do with a bit of take home about be careful about what you put on Twitter and email, because this is many years ago.
I think you're
and
right.
Now she's, and now it's been picked up on her, so it's hard to. Then you've got to apologise for the transgressions of your past, and we all make mistakes, but when I was a kid.
You've got a whole series on ITV2 that you wish had never happened.
I have several novels of transgressions, but unfortunately, there was no iPhones or devices to record any of it. It's all in my head.
Colin, I did a Miss Wet T-shirt competition in 1983.
You didn't win it.
Yeah.
And I've been pursuing public office for a long time now, and I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know? But in my defence, I looked amazing. I mean, it was fantastic.
You are hot when you are wet.
Thank you.
That's why you want to go to Palestine, you know, to relive those white T-shirts.
I think the reason the temperature's so hot in here. At some point, Mark's going to ask us to throw water on him to cool him down.
I'm also trying to make it feel like the Middle East in here. I'm trying to sort of foster that sort of atmosphere of heat, tension, and
hence the dates and baklava.
Are you conscious? I mean, it's funny that with social media. It's true that once you sort of post stuff, it's there forever. I've never put my family, I've never taken pictures of my kids and stuff, you know, and put it on Facebook. And because obviously everyone is now a publisher. There are no gatekeepers anymore. And I think it's fine unless you're at some point planning on being a public figure. Here's the question, though, Colin. Do you level the scoreboard? Once someone goes into politics, is what they've done in the past, like, that's just like, that's been gone and... because every American election, there's just like a crack team of investigators who go through like Hillary Clinton's past and Donald Trump's past, and they're just trying to clean it up, exactly, detoxify the whole thing. But would you level the scoreboard for someone that goes into public life and
I think I prefer that system of trying to clean it up, because I think that's just a fun thing to do. I think it provides someone with a good job of filtering through your Twitter feed. If you ever do go for public office, I could go through your Twitter feed and just delete some of the things that might cause you a problem.
I think that job probably exists. I just think it's impossible. It's like trying to clean up leaves in a windy day, isn't it?
It really is. And there's a wonderful Darwinian element to it, because you get a lot of people who claim for disability allowance and stuff, and then they go on Facebook and they go, "Here's me at a triathlon." And it's amazing that those people do that. That not satisfied with stealing from the public purse, they then have to brag about how physically active they are at that current
time. It's one of my top five stories that you see every year, along with no in particular order. There's that story. There's explosion at fireworks factory every year.
Genius.
Every year. My favourite is man dies trying to save dog from frozen lake.
Yeah. Correct.
Nobody ever learns.
Darwin. It's like a hashtag Darwin, like in practice, isn't it? Darwin at work, really. And it's no bad thing for that. This is what you're listening to.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Now, we're going to talk about relationships, actually, because the number of marriages tumbled in 2013 because couples were worried that that year was jinxed. Figures for how many people tied the knot showed a fall for the first time in 4 years. Couple postponed their nuptials, fearing the unlucky number 13 could jinx them. But in fact, there's an overall picture that marriage is having a sort of mini crisis, and overall marriage figures in the UK are on a downward spiral. Now, Les, you are in a very happy, committed relationship. I believe you're married to that lovely lady, aren't you?
I am, indeed. By the way, I just love the word nuptials.
Nuptials. It's a beautiful word, isn't it?
I'm not even sure I don't actually know what it means.
It sounds like a euphemism for your nether regions, doesn't it? Mm. We're back to your weathered arse again, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been married 18 years.
18 years. Now, why marry and why not just have a girlfriend and be like groovy? Because you live in North London. That's kind of the thing
it's
to
totally,
do.
It's almost totally acceptable. I remember when we lived together and weren't married, there would still be excrement pushed through the letterbox, but that was me. And
that was a complaint that you, and luckily you got the operation happened and you're fine now.
Do you know what it is? That on a slightly serious
careful
point, I know, which is obviously somewhere I don't normally go. It's like putting over the edge of a cliff. But I, there was a point at which I thought, we've lived together for X number of years, blah, 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 and I just thought, you've got to make some commitment. And there isn't really... There's no middle ground commitment, is there? You can tell people, we're partners, whatever, but there's no middle ground commitment. There's really, but people can have, some sort of ceremony that's, you know, but doesn't mean anything. But it's still not legal, it's whatever. So there just came a point, you went, I want this to be more official, and the only way of making it official is getting married. There's no other formats, as far as that, apart from probably some hippy-dippy shit.
The thing is, maybe we overthink marriage, because the bottom line is, if you look at it historically, it wasn't a romantic document. It was purely a legal and financial arrangement.
No, this is what my marriage is.
I know. Well, I've dined with...
Did I fail to say she was really rich? Oh, sorry.
I've been out with you socially, and then all the exchange is angry stares, really. I mean, the enmity in the room is all... is palpable.
Sometimes. I mean, I think she wishes we'd never done nuptials, or however you use that word.
It's just a sort of heady mix of contempt and sort of doleful rage.
I just think she thinks, look, if I get rid of him, that's £9 million down the swanny. So...
Well, that's right. Now, Colin, are you in a relationship at the moment?
I'm not, no. And I think not only was 2013 unlucky, but I think maybe 2010 through 2015 might have been unlucky, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more unlucky years
in there,
definitely. Why those years particularly?
Just because I think that's since I was last in a relationship. And even then, you can probably skip back to 2007 was unlucky as well, and 2006 and 2005 too. But I think, like Les was saying, I think we maybe just need to introduce more middle ground options, you know?
Yeah.
So you can move in together, and then maybe instead of getting married but still make a commitment, you can get tethered together, or you could share the one mobile phone.
Oh,
or
yeah.
There's like lots of other things you could do that are kind of a step above moving in with someone.
Maybe a special ring that you'd wear on a different finger that means I'm not married, but I am taken.
This is rather cunning.
Oh, what about what about a taken sweatband that you wear around your
head? Or what about a ring with a GPS chip in it?
Yeah.
So
my wife gave me one of those for Christmas. She's never been happier.
Oh, okay.
She's got a lair in our home, like a basement lair with computers. It's like basically
the Batcave.
It's the Batcave. Thank you.
Who was the? This is because
she's like, why is he? Why is he at a small Waitrose on Holloway Road? Why is he there? And then the text comes in.
Seeing as
I know where you are.
Why is it the small Waitrose on Holloway Road at 3 a.m?
Yeah, that's
out the back specifically near some skips.
Yeah.
Who was it, Mark? You remember this. I think this is going back many, many years. A comedian that used to do a joke about... Oh, might have been Sean Mayo, actually. I hope he doesn't mind mentioning this, because it's a long time ago, but about the wedding when
he's
first...
He's still doing it, by the way.
Sean Mayo would not be doing it. But when you got your ring on it, you're constantly fiddling with it, trying to work out the combination.
Oh, that's genius.
You don't remember who it was. I think
that's that does sound like Mio. That sounds like the work of Mio, because he's a strong, talented, clever man. But here's the thing. I like that. So if actually... If you're sharing Wi-Fi, then that's like the new...
I think we just need to introduce other steps in the relationship. Because you've got them, you've got your the American term, the first, second, third, fourth base for your first date and your first few dates. So you just need to introduce all of those different bases for marriage.
And somebody might say, by the way, there is a middle ground, a middle ground, which is engaged. But that isn't middle ground, because the point of engaged is you're engaged to be married. Yeah, that's the point. It's still towards marriage.
Yeah.
But lots of people go, oh, I'm engaged. So that's a thing. That's a finite thing. So you get engaged 5 or 6 times and you're going, well, no, the whole point is you're engaged in marriage. Well, that engaged process should be called something else.
I agree. I think guys have often enjoyed that little kind of grey area of the engagement, haven't they? Thinking this is just a sort of stopgap, and the females are in quite a different place with it when they're sort of Googling wedding dresses.
Yeah.
And the guys are like, well, no, this is just to stop you shagging Dave from accounts, actually. Yeah. This is, I'm just, all it is, it's a heavy pencil.
It's a heavy pencil.
Yeah. But here's my question to you. Do you think, I mean, it's interesting that the issue of marriage clearly, first of all, divorce rates are very high, almost 50-50 now, as the blood drains from Les Keane's face, that statistic. But I just wonder whether the facility of sex now, the facility of easy dating, of Tinder, of apps, of online, the choice that's out there, you've cut out the middleman, whether there just isn't that need anymore. I mean, I think back in the day, if you look at my sort of grandparents' generation, I'm of Irish stock myself, Colin. Yes. And my folks are, my dad's from like Cavan and my mum's from Drogheda near Dublin in the County Louth. And you know, back in the day, people got married so they could get laid. I mean, they're basically, the wedding night was like this very big occasion.
Yeah, that's what it seems.
But now you don't need that.
I think people also got married a bit sooner, partly for that and partly because they weren't going to move outside of their town, so
I think we are going back some point in time here. You're going back 60 years, when in fact, you know, Freelove 1960s. It's been fairly easy for the past 40 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it's now hitting the buffers.
But it's a very, very good point that you raise. It's true. But I suppose maybe what I would suggest that in a kind of historic curve, the overall, you know, and obviously like the swinging 60s, the arrival of the contraceptive pill, this was like the beginning of the end maybe for commitment. I don't know. I'm curious as to whether the sort of the Tinder syndrome, I just wonder whether it's a slight myth and that people are just as conservative as they ever were. And actually, people crave the long-term commitment. Once they get to the end of their 20s and they're shagging and the free, whether it's still something people just like to do.
I suspect it's just the cost of getting married is what puts most people off.
Yeah.
Well, most people wait until they bought a flat or something like that before they get married. They can't even get to that point, can they?
So, but what I'm mystified is why anyone gets married these days. In a sense that with all that choice, all that freedom, why bother? I mean, Colin, is it like in your timeline, in your mind, in your life, that eventually you'll tie the knot?
No, I'm not a fan of fuss, and that seems to be what wedding is.
You don't
really
like fuss.
Is pure fuss. I think people are maybe just doing it later. But at the same time, the free and easy sex that you're talking about, I can see that declining soon. People will just, the closer they'll get to sex, just sending each other pictures of their penis and stuff like that. Two people will send each other a photograph. They'll exchange those things and they'll just.
This is actually how I booked Les onto the show today. This is the only currency he understands.
And then an app will show you what that, based on those genitals, will show you what a baby might
a baby
look like.
Look
and he
like.
Goes, oh, fuck me, he's ugly. We're not getting.
You
not
swipe left
up.
On that baby.
baby Tinder.
You then exchange genitals with someone else until you find a baby you like, and then you get that virtual baby.
Maybe, I like it.
Maybe you see what it's like when it's nine. And then decide whether or not to keep it.
Oh, I like it. And then it's really good looking, and but it's actually got ADTT. Is it ADDT?
ADHD, because I'm very obsessive about these things. Attention deficit
disorder. Yeah, okay, so ADD. So that's it. You get yourself, it's a good looking baby. And then, it's got ADD.
I think ultimately, the curious thing is, like, do you think in 100 years people will not, marriage will be over?
Very possibly. It will be less popular than
you think
more
so?
Popular. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think things will be a lot different in 100 years.
Because, really? I suppose it started as a religious-y kind of a thing, was it? It was, at least in Ireland,
I think
it's
so.
Seen as a religious thing.
Yeah, but it is, but then it's often equated to just a financial arrangement, as in who gets what. I mean, for me, I like your idea of replacing first base, second base, and instead you just like, first base, as you say, is sharing Wi-Fi, like tethering the iPhone. Colin's iPhone 6, connect, here's the password. Second base, moving in together and paying for a dishwasher slowly, like
nice.
On higher purchase.
Yeah, getting into
some sort of contract with the John Lewis partnership that both your names are on.
And you could even
serious commitment.
You could basically
stage that
it?
As well. You could do it over 24 months the first time, and then maybe go to 36.
Darling, I'm thinking about get down on one knee, of course. First, I'm thinking about taking out a 5-year loan together.
She cried. First thing she got it, but you called her dad first. I mean, do you mind if I borrow some money from Ocean Finance?
Yeah.
And dad's like, I'm very proud. Of course you can, son.
We're buying a 3-piece suite.
From DFS.
Yeah.
We're paying full price because we're fuckwits. You're listening to, see, every time. Always funny. You're listening to Les Keane and Colin Chadwick. We're going to reward them with a break, and actually, if I'm honest, you guys with a break too, we'll play a record, an actual structured piece of thing that someone's made, and then back to the opposite after Arctic Monkeys, Are You Mine?
I'm a puppet on a string, Tracy Island, time traveling diamond, could have shaped heartaches, I come to find you, four in some velvet morning, years too late, she's a silver lining, Lone Ranger riding through an open space, in my mind, when she's not right there beside me, I go crazy, cause here isn't where I wanna be, and satisfaction feels like a distant memory. And I can't help myself, all I wanna ever say is, are you mine? Well, are you mine? Are you mine? Are you mine? All right. I guess what trying to say is I need the deep end, keep imagining meeting, wished away entire lifetimes unfair, we're not somewhere misbehaving for days, great escape, lost track of time and space, she's a silver lining climbing on my desire, and I go crazy cause here isn't where I wanna be, and satisfaction feels like a distant memory, and I can't help myself, all I wanna ever say is, are you mine? Well, are you mine? In my mind, when she's not right there beside me, I go crazy, cause here isn't where I wanna be, and satisfaction feels like a distant memory, and I can't help myself, all right, wanna hear her say, is, are you mine? Well, are you mine?
It's the news on FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio presents
Doc Brown and Hugh Joseph.
You can basically study anything, and very little surprises me. And this one, I think both of us could get a first class in. Pizza Hut has teamed up with Manchester Met, and they're creating 1,500 apprenticeships for students in the world of not just pizza making, but the world of the hut.
What? So yeah. No. So you can... What? I don't understand. Okay, so you can get a degree to work at Pizza Hut. Can't I just go to Pizza Hut, like, right now and apply for a job?
Dude, just give me some fucking dough. Do you know what I'm saying? And I've already got your first year nailed.
Every Tuesday...
Doc Brown and Hugh Joseph.
From 4 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Right, you're listening to FUBAR Radio, and we are in the company of myself. They call me in these parts, Mark Dolan, and I'm in the company of the brilliant comedian Colin Chadwick and the marvellous ex-stand-up comedian, television producer, writer, and many other things. Les Keane is the name will be on the credits of everything. And like going back a really long way, I mean, you started writing for telly in what, the mid-90s, early 90s?
It was more like 97, 98.
Amazing. You worked with a few legends, didn't you?
Yeah, I've worked with probably everybody at some point.
Everyone and anyone.
At some point, yeah. And anyone that will pay me. It's gun for hire, isn't it?
It's marvellous. But you were a stand-up as well.
For many years, yeah.
So when is the kind of comeback tour happening?
Oh, right.
Because
yeah,
I'm
working on that.
I'm ready.
Do you know, I'm working. Do you know what? ABC have just brought out The Lexicon of Love 2, 33 years later. I think I'm working on their time scale.
Oh really?
Okay,
I hear you. You're rather cunning in that department. Listen, let's have a quick word on, because we are kind of technically, occasionally, like entreated to talk about the news because the show's called Mark Dolan Eats News. So let's just quickly do now. Junior doctors, I don't really want to get caught up in the legalese of their case. Essentially, it would appear. Okay, I'll quickly do it, which is that the Tories were elected on a platform, or at least it was in their manifesto, of a seven-day NHS. And therefore, the contracts have changed for junior doctors so that working at the weekend is something that they're, I think, a bit more obliged to do under the new contract. It's not so voluntary anymore. But also that getting paid more at the weekend is something that's being like brought into question. It's the idea that you're kind of on the same package on a Monday as you would on a Sunday, so you're losing that, the weekend being different and special and better paid and optional. So that's like really roughly, but there's many more shades of grey to it than that. But here's the thing, Colin, they're on strike now. I don't want to take sides on this. I would say one thing, which is it's very refreshing to see middle class people on strike for a change, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because it's like the poshest industrial action ever. I don't know if you've seen the footage, but they all look amazing. They're like in like Boden catalogue clothing. No one gets wet. It's like Gore-Tex Central, Ugg boots, Hunter's wellies, you know, and they've got like their Pret lattes. It's the most stylish strike
in
the history.
Signs and links to some app on their phone.
Yeah, like, you know, it's an iPad on a stick.
Yeah, an iPad on a stick.
The quickest way, by the way, to clear, because like, obviously there are hundreds of people outside various hospitals. If you want to clear, just get everyone out. Just tell them their Ricardo order has been delivered. And it's like, bang, gone, right? What do we want? Fair pay. When do we want it? After Ask the Midwife. So, here's the thing. I couldn't think of a more middle-class TV show, by the way. Do you think?
So what do we want? Pre-soft avocados.
You're so right. What do they call those? They call them the guaranteed ripe and ready to eat.
Yeah.
That's very strong. I like that because it doesn't scan, which makes it better. So, do you think we should have a thing where certain people are not allowed to strike? It's worth mentioning that soldiers and police officers are not allowed to strike. And firemen are.
You mean strike as in
stop working?
Yeah, as opposed to various other kinds of strike.
Well, yeah, correct. As in literally strike, yeah. I know. What do you think? I mean, do you think that, you know, the junior doctors, you could argue that maybe they've got blood on their hands. There might be someone who needed an operation last week and didn't get it.
But I suppose the question is that even when there's a strike, is that everybody out? I mean, most, it's like, I don't know, you do the teacher strike.
Yeah.
They're on strike again. Yeah, one union of the teachers. I mean, I don't know this for sure because the teachers have got more than one union. So sometimes there's a strike and certain teachers are on strike and other ones aren't.
It's very, very similar to darts in that way.
which is the best union to join. I don't know whether that's true or not. But there might be one for surgeons, one for doctors. But
Maybe there's a bit of like general. You might have a guy, there might be like a very plucky like hospital porter who's willing to have a go at an appendectomy.
Yeah, someone who's seen a few being done. Yeah,
he's like, mate, I've been here for 20 years carrying body parts around.
It needs a tracheotomy. Pass me your Bic pencil.
Yeah.
Your Bic pencil? No, just Bic
pencil. How hard can it be? I've got the internet on my phone. Let's just try.
Yeah, I think how hard can it be is closely followed by the words pretty fucking hard.
Yeah. Is that supposed to be?
I'm terribly sorry, Mark. Apparently sorry, love. He's dead. My sister's been a nurse for 30 odd years and was a casualty nurse for probably 25,
which is hardcore. I mean, that's basically the trenches, isn't it?
It's a bit like the Vietnam War kind of thing. So I have a sort of vested view on this. That doesn't make any sense. I think they should be able to strike because I imagine most people I know in care are actually in care because they care rather than going, I'm in this for lots of money. Mm. Well, nurses certainly not, but even doctors going to earn good money again. Yeah, but it's a long road before you get the good money. So I'd like to think that most people, if A, they're actually wanting to become doctors, etc., B, if they're working in the NHS, which is a brilliant institution, when they possibly could be working elsewhere, then I have to assume that their first port of call is wanting to care for people. And it's for them, it's their last possible, the last thing they can do. So it's not their first choice. This is last chance.
The last resort sort of thing.
And that's what I think. And they should be able to do it, because you can't. I mean, okay, the army, I understand, probably wouldn't want them to strike or indeed form a coup. But
God, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Difficult. I'd like to see someone trying to enforce the army if they chose to strike. Who are you going to call in? Because normally you'd call in the army. So
it's a very, very good point, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's probably covered in the junior doctor's new contract that they have to step in if the army do go on strike.
I suppose in some ways we have to treasure the concept. It's difficult. We do it through gritted teeth. But treasure the concept of striking, because although it's always inconvenient, whether it's a tube strike and you can't get around London, or whether it's a junior doctor's strike and they can't replace your heart urgently, which is so annoying.
To quote Hancock, did Magna Carta die in vain?
There you go. Genius.
Because it has been inconvenient for me. I like to get really drunk and abuse people in A&E.
Yes.
And the last few days, that's just been harder for me to do, you know. I like to be my own worst enemy. And then bring that and put it on someone else in A&E, but it's just not easy.
I think you do go in A&E, by the way, if anybody hasn't been recently. And I've got two kids, so I've been there a lot.
That's a concern.
It is a concern, yeah.
God, you could hear a pin drop after that.
So I would say make sure that you can definitely survive 5 hours minimum. Okay, so it's not okay. It's a long time, but you just need to go there prepared.
Take your
iPad, make sure it's fully charged, or your phone. Yeah. Take an extra charger, possibly some books, maybe one of those sleeping things that go around your neck. Some snacks.
I know.
And then just go in a corner somewhere that the other drunks aren't going to spot you, and just hang out there. Or another little tip I've got for you: I broke my thumb recently. I said it was last year, doing the running man. 50-year-old men shouldn't do that.
And the running man is one of those ridiculous.
The running man, and was quite drunk, and I really damaged it falling.
Actually,
over.
No. Could you explain what that? No, I misunderstood. What is the running man?
You know, the running man, like Ice Cube, that thing.
Okay,
MC Hammer.
In what context were you doing this?
Just dancing at somebody's party.
Okay, all right.
This is really hurting me, and I knew it was broken. And I thought,
did you fall on it or something?
I fell flat backwards.
Silly sausage.
And I thought, I'm not going to casualty tonight because I'll just think I'm just some drunken fool who's been dancing at a party. Yeah. So cleverly, I just put up with the pain all night, and I went in the following morning. I went, I just slipped over on some leaves outside.
Oh, that was very good. And they're like, and why is there the smell of neat alcohol from your breath? It's even worse.
And then they're going to get a triage again. How did you do it? I was just checking, doing the running man, why outside on leaves? Yeah, it's the thing I do.
The thing about the NHS, I think, is well regarded organisation. One of the great things about being British about this country, but you essentially need to have a limb hanging off to be seen within 2 hours, don't you?
You do.
Essentially,
you do. But
your heart has to be dangling out of your throat.
So that's
for them to go. Actually, I might actually tell a doctor that he's here.
So that's a good tip. If you do want to get seen during the strike, is maybe just add a bit more damage to whatever's been done. Maybe slice a bit of a finger almost off.
Yes.
While you're there, and just say, now, am I further up the list now? How
correct.
About now? Another finger gone. So just play top trumps basically with your injuries.
Not only do you get unquestioned laughter from this show and satirical comment, but just helpful life hacks.
Yeah, literal hacks.
And it's really funny that I should use the expression life hacks, because my brand new show is premiering tonight at the Udderbelly Festival on London's South Bank, and it's on its way to the Edinburgh International Fringe, and it's called Life Hacks. What are the chances?
That's amazing, isn't it?
That's just a lovely moment. Colin, the check's in the post. We're going to play another record. Then we're going to talk about BHS. Would you go to the wake that is their final sale, the sale to end all sales, right? A sale that makes DFS look ungenerous in terms of reductions. Always funny. Yeah. We're also going to talk about baked beans and whether you could survive in solitary confinement. It's nothing if not eclectic. I'll give you guys a choice now. I've got Fleetwood Mac, Jimi Hendrix, or Van Halen. Where should we go?
Van Halen, Jimmy.
You looked, well, it depends on the song.
I definitely wasn't going to go for Van Halen.
I've got Ain't Talking About Love by Van Halen. I've got All Along the Watchtower with Hendrix. Go Your Own Way, the Mac.
I like... well, I like
think
them all.
You famously don't like any of them, do you?
I don't know my band. I'm in a band.
It's a Sophie's choice.
We play that particular Fleetwood Mac track.
Of the band. Tell me about the band.
Oh, it's just a dad band. You're in a band. Isn't it? It's a dad band.
So what have you got? What's it called? The Running Walk? No,
The Running Man. I don't do that.
We've got The Running Man.
You're not the Bears of the band.
You literally, you've got The Running Man. You're in a band. Yeah, you arrived here tonight on a Harley Davidson motorbike. I'm worried about you. You've been texting some woman called Linda who isn't your wife. I'm worried about you, Les.
Or, in fact, a woman.
Correct.
He's actually a truck driver from Rill.
That'll do, when needs must. In that case, you guys seem... Well, Colin, what do you fancy?
I'm good for any of them.
I feel like
we're not going to get an agreement.
All right. Well, look, I think Jimmy...
I'm going to go on
Jimmy,
strike. I'm going on strike over this.
Jimi Hendrix, and I'll tell you why. It gives me a chance to do my... those moments when you love London. And by the way, we are a global radio station, and we've got listeners in the extraordinary cities of Manchester and Leeds and Edinburgh and Glasgow and Cardiff and Belfast and all over our great nation. But occasionally you just think, oh, London, oh. And one of them is this, and it's basically a street in Soho, and I believe from memory it's Broderick Street. And Broderick Street has got two blue plaques on one of the houses. In fact, they're neighbouring houses. And it's, I guess, Georgian architecture. And there's a blue plaque, and it says, Jimi Hendrix lived here from this date to this date in the 1960s. And then next door, there's another blue plaque, and it says, George Friedrich Handel lived here from this date to this date. And I just thought, hashtag, that's London. Now, it's FUBAR Radio, and we will therefore play Jimi Hendrix, who was basically Handel's neighbour. Welcome to the world of mad music. Ladies and gentlemen... Let's let Jimmy do the talking. It's FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. Yeah.
Radio presents
The Friday Social with Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne.
Boris Johnson is set today to unveil plans to push through the rollout of Boris boards. How is this going to impact the Santander Boris bike? We're actually joined by a Boris bike, Christopher Thomas. What's going to the response be? Are you going to kind of work with them, or is it just going to be friction, or what's going to happen?
I'm not letting it get to me, you know. I'm just going to spend the weekend doing loads of gear.
Oh, I see what you did there. You are a clever Boris bike, Christopher Thomas.
I am.
Every Friday.
The Friday Social with Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne.
From 1 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
It's the Friday Social. It's literally worth a listen, it turns out, as is all of our output on FUBAR Radio 24 hours a day. The price of FUBAR Radio to you as a consumer is zero point zero, and worth the money, I think you'll agree. Now, it's 12:45. Comedian Colin Chadwick.
I was
going to
say, certainly not overpriced, is it?
Well, it isn't. Although it's been my sort of stock gag when I do free comedy nights. I go, is it just me, or have you guys still overpaid?
Yeah.
You know, just by being here.
But even if you said, is that value
for
money?
You've got a babysitter,
money?
You're still minus.
I suppose if you said, is it value for money? You're going, well, there's something free. I mean, what is the level of value of that?
Well,
for you, as your stand-up, I'm sure.
You know, you're right. What, my stat? What, do you mean... Life hacks at the Underbelly tonight.
Yeah,
at
I was
9 o'clock.
Yeah. Was that life hacks tonight at the Underbelly?
Well, I feel it's been embarrassing that you keep bringing it up. I've got to say, chaps. Now, boys, let's talk about the decline of a great British brand, which is the British Home Stores. And people always forget that BHS stands for British Home Stores, a venerated
and not bloody
retailer.
Horrible shit.
Well, hopefully not. Although it looks like the public think that because they stopped shopping there years ago. Les, could you give two hoots? Does it matter?
I'll tell you what, though. A good thing to go shopping for at British Home Stores is... but it's a very specific bit of shopping, is if you're Philip Green, you can go there and you can pick up, like, £300 or £400 million.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah. And the beauty of it is it doesn't cost you any money. You just go in there, you take it, and they go, oh, how much is that? I go, no, you just have that. And £1. Have £1 as well when you sell the company at the end of it. So, no, I mean, British Home Store. I mean, it's one of those things like seeing it's all of those stores. You're going, what is it you sell? When you've got sudden, oh, God, this sounds like some tedious Mary, what's she called?
Mary Portas.
Mary Portas. But when nobody knows what your shop actually sells anymore, then it's done for, isn't it?
Well, it's like M&S for people with low self-esteem, isn't it, BHS?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like people who look... They look at M&S and they breathe on the window outside, like Charlie in the chocolate factory, like glaring at a chocolate bar. And they kind of go, oh, if I was a better person, if my life was better, I'd be an M&S customer. But sod it, off
plus
we go.
Plus, all those homewares and stuff are all sold by all the major supermarkets now, aren't they?
Colin,
yes.
Are you familiar with the British Home Stores?
I don't think I've ever been in it. When I heard it mentioned in the news, I was trying to think, and it seems like a shop that I've never been inside.
Probably know it as IHS.
IHS.
Irish Home Stores.
Correct. Yep, they
even
are.
Though Britain, technically, but...
Irish people have been boycotting British Home Stores, do they have an Irish section?
No, they do. IHS in the 80s made a fortune on balaclavas. thank you. I'm here all week. That was just easy. But sometimes, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
I think it was lovely. I presume you're talking about the cold snaps that we were getting.
Yeah. Of course I was. Yeah.
Well, how many colours? What colours did they do them in?
Well, any colour you like, as long as it was black. But now, what I want to ask you is this. The Irish are really good retailers, in fact, because very few people realise that Primark is an Irish-owned business.
Yes, Pennies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
As it's called in Ireland.
Pennies, which is what you pay for, like, a T-shirt or a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
So the Irish are very, entrepreneurial race altogether. And therefore, I mean, it's just, I guess if you look at something like Primark, you're like, well, that's actually the business model now. In 2016, it is just all about, it's the price tag, isn't it? And fast fashion. And people just don't have, there's no brand loyalty anymore. My mum would be like, my mum is, I would say, a Sainsbury's lady.
Sainsbury's?
Yeah. I still can't say it. I get flashbacks. But how do you say it? Sainsbury's?
Sainsbury's.
See, that's where they're going wrong. They've got a name you can't say, or at least I can't. But, you know, she has that brand identification, I would say, with Sainsbury's. And I would say she has a brand identification with M&S and perhaps John Lewis. And they're like, this is you know, where she goes. It's a little bit like, you know, or maybe you've always voted Tory, or you've always voted Labour, you've always shopped at John Lewis. It's just these things. That's all out the window now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Although back when I was younger, all of my clothes came from, I come from a big family, so they all came from just my older brothers.
Not even a shop, just a just the wardrobe upstairs.
Yeah, they would develop. So they had a pretty strong brand identity, which I bought into.
Yeah, and I bet they did.
And I wore their clothes for years. But I think most people are, well, I buy clothes online. I don't like going into shops.
Really?
Because
you're very brave.
I feel much more awkward buying clothes in a shop, like stripping off there and kind of, and then screaming for help. You know, it's I feel much more comfortable doing that at home.
Who's screaming for help? But the shop staff.
Oh well, I scream louder. Yeah. and the customer is always right. So
yeah,
no matter how much they plea, they have to do what I say.
Do you have any loyalty to brands? I mean, there's a few that I, you know, who I'm sort of like almost emotionally committed to, and I would never waver. Ryanair, obviously. JD Weatherspoon. I mean, that guy's like a brother to me.
Any pub that decides that a carpet is a good idea on the floor of their bar. I mean, how does that
poetry.
Work? But yet they're massively successful.
Do you have, I mean, joking apart, which I've been doing for the last hour, I would say John Lewis, for example, that is a brand that I have like an unquestioning loyalty to. So in other words, there's no debate about purchasing something from John Lewis. Like, I like that washing machine, I will buy it. And I'll go to John Lewis. I don't have to, whereas like curries.digital, that's like takes a lot of soul searching just to even contemplate going into one of those.
Yeah, I don't know why that you feel that, because obviously the washing machine you're buying,
it's silly,
not made,
isn't it?
Well, it's not made by John Lewis, is it? You'll be buying it by someone else because they're just a housing for other brands.
But it's just like, I don't know really. I think I get the washing machine, I use it for like a month, and then I had this with John. I don't want to do an advert for them now, but I bought an iron from John Lewis, as you do. I took it back after about 3 weeks and they said, what's wrong with it? And I said, I looked at them with my big blue eyes and I just said, there's nothing wrong with it. I just don't like it very much. I don't like this iron.
You don't like the iron?
No, I don't love it. I said, it's okay. It's an iron and it functions as an iron. Iron's clothes. I just don't love it. It doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me smile. And they literally, the guy looked at me with his big, dark Arabian eyes and he said, that's good enough for me.
Where's the life?
Give me your credit card details. You can go to John Lewis. I just don't love it.
But where's the life lesson there? You see, you can't do that with anything else.
You can't do it.
They're spoiling you. No wonder you're going on.
You can't do it with wives. If you try to do that with wives, yeah, they hate it. They go nuts.
But you're right. The beauty of that place is that you can take things back.
And everyone loves that. No quibble.
My lovely wife the other day said, she wanted to go and buy some. This is very tedious, but I got to go and buy some towels from John Lewis. And she said, how many do you think we need? And I said, I think we need enough so that we never, ever have to have this conversation again.
Oh, correct. You are such a boy. Your missus is basically married to the Rain Man, isn't she? I mean, she is a lucky lady. And wow.
Just get
See,
enough.
I just, for I me, just... I look forward to chats about towels.
Oh, really?
Yeah, welcome to my world. Yeah. But I think that brand loyalty thing you mentioned online, by definition, online is sort of
anything.
There's no loyalty, is there? Because you can actually just Google an item, and then the internet will offer you the best deal.
Yeah, that's unless cheap is a brand, then I have no brand loyalty.
It should be.
I will just pay as little as possible for everything.
When they introduced the 5p for the carrier bag, right? There were items at Primark where the bag was the most valuable thing you left the building with. I mean, it's just like cheap fashion is clearly where it's at. British Home Store. The only thing I would say about some of these brands is that they sort of part of the backdrop of our culture. Like, let's imagine if M&S went down. I think, you know, this country wouldn't be the same again.
I suspect one day we'll go down. Because like the C&A went, Woolworths went. They're all brands.
I don't know anyone that doesn't still miss Woolies.
No, because I'll tell you what Woolies was.
I know you miss it.
I miss it because for one reason only. When there was a thing that you couldn't find anywhere else at any other shop.
Yes.
There was only one place to go. Again, you can't find that thing that you want that's really...
Yeah.
Oh, well, Woolies will probably have it. And they managed to... Their niche was, we'll find out the one thing that, that other stores don't have, and we'll start stocking that. It could be anything. It could be socks for cats. It doesn't, you know.
Correct.
It just, but they would have it, and you go, have you got some? Have you got some socks for cats? And they go, yeah, of course, the cat sock section.
I agree with you. I used to have this bit.
Is that why they've gone out of business, though? They're selling stuff that, why does no other shop sell this stuff?
No, that's right.
Yeah.
There's the rub. Because it was. It was like the promise of Woolworths was everything you would never want under one roof.
Yeah, so
just go knock yourself out with the cat booties. I've got to say, my cat has cold feet, and it's because of the decline of Woolworths. Les just sneezed. I don't want to kind of out you as debauched, but all I would say is the ugly face of cocaine abuse, ladies and gentlemen. So yeah, well, no, that's the thing.
But the thing I find about things like the British Home Stores. It gets sold for £1. Is it not just tempting to go and buy it for £1 just for a bit?
For a laugh.
Just go, what do you do? I
just own BHS.
Yeah, and I've rebranded it. It's now called Les Keane's BHS.
Yeah.
Just for the hell of it. Just for shits and giggles, as they say.
Yeah, but and then, I mean, the sad part of this story, of course, is that 11,000 people might lose their jobs. But on the plus side, guys, you will no longer be working for British Home.
Does this tell us, oh God, does it tell us that you're right, every brand will go down? Because I have another, and this is like almost like good radio, but not quite, which is, it's like,
that should be your strap line. It's almost like good radio, but not quite.
Oh, we'll take that. It's almost like we've produced this, which is to say that for the first time since the invention of the iPhone, iPhone sales have dropped for the first time in Apple's history.
Yeah.
So this is like the slippery slope, the beginning of the end. Nothing is sacred. Nothing is permanent.
But it's because everybody's got one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's so many.
Except John Lewis, and in 1,000 years' time, everything will be changed. They'll be like post-apocalyptic, and mainly it's aliens.
See, most of my Apple products I've bought through John Lewis rather than the Apple store.
Of course you did. You want them to have the money. It's a pleasure to give them your money. And I tell you what, boys, you guys are not cheap as bookings on this show, but you guys are worth every penny that we've invested. Yeah. Hysterical laughter.
You ordered me online, I think.
Yep, that's where I get my best people. Before I let you go, we've had a baked beans test, okay, and it's obviously hard-hitting news. Various brands have sort of received different sort of scores. So, for example, Tesco baked beans have had 4 out of 10. Aldi, 3 out of 10. Morrison's, 8 out of 10. M&S, 6 out of 10. Why are we even having this conversation? Isn't it a thing with certain brands? It's like, it's Heinz baked beans.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah, it's you'd almost call beans Heinz.
Now, I know, I understand there's a budget issue, and I understand that, but I've never understood why someone will go, if they had a choice, they'll be like, oh, I think I'll try the Morrison's baked beans, actually. I can afford the Heinz, but let's see what they've got to offer.
Well, I suspect most people can afford the Heinz, can't they?
I would hope so.
I'm going to say something pretty contentious. I reckon I eat baked beans once, maybe twice a year, possibly.
Oh, call really? Yourself Northern. You've changed.
I just don't particularly like them.
I get through a lot. I got some on special offer recently. They were curried Heinz beans for 50p.
I wondered what the smell was. The methane in this room is positively toxic. Colin Chadwick, Les Keane, thank you for joining us. You guys are the comedic equivalent of Heinz baked beans or Hellman's mayonnaise.
With sausages,
all of that stuff. We're back next week. Thanks for your company. I'm Mark Dolan. Here's a record, and it's a good one. Yes, indeed. It's the Floyds and Breathe in the Air. Something I wouldn't recommend in this studio. Hashtag curried beans. Thanks, boys. We'll catch you next week. I've been Mark Dolan, and I still will be in 7 days' time, all being well. What, the Underbelly tonight, 9 o'clock?
Where? South Bank, the Thames, maybe.
Thanks, Les. Checks in the post.
Are you?